Britain.
Badgett. Goodbye, 2019. The Conservatives' world has disappeared. Don't tell Rishi.
In Goodbye, Lenin, a cult German film, a devoutly communist mother suffers a heart attack in the autumn of 1989 and ends up in a coma. By the time she wakes up, the Berlin Wall has fallen. Germany is on the path to reunification and communism has crumbled. A poignant farce ensues, in which her son, Alexander, shields his ailing mother from capitalist reality, recording fake news bulletins showing Berliners rushing east, not west. In her bedroom, the Deutsche Demokratische Republik, or DDR, carries on. Outside it, free Germans buy Billy bookcases from IKEA, drive Volkswagens and drink Coca-Cola. Such near-heroic denial of circumstances is now in vogue in British politics. On May 3rd, Rishi Sunak took a victory lap in Teesside, which was the Conservative Party's only victory out of 11 mayoral races in local elections. "I've got a message for the Labour Party," said the Tory Prime Minister, currently trailing Labour by 20 points in national polls. "They know that they have to win here in order to win a general election. In fact, the Conservatives suffered a swing against them which would guarantee they lose all their seats in a region that is a vital chunk of the Red Wall, a band of traditionally Labour constituencies that the party is so proud of winning in the 2019 general election." Back then, a cottage industry of politicos, writers and party loyalists declared that a permanent realignment of British politics had taken place. Instead, areas that swung to the Tories for the first time in 2019, such as Teesside, will be among the first to swing back to Labour. In 2024, de-realignment is the order of the day. A world that was supposed to be a new political settlement has ended remarkably quickly. Those who believed in it are at risk of bewilderment, rather as if they had just woken from a coma. Goodbye, Lenin shows that uncomfortable reality can be kept at bay for a long time with enough will. Conservative strategists have insisted for almost 2 years now that Labour's 20-something percentage point poll lead is soft. This is justified in peculiar ways. The most curious is the idea that people do not especially like Labour and simply hate the Conservatives. This is accurate enough, but it's odd for the Tories to present it as a positive. It has misplaced the swagger of an ex-husband greeting his ex-wife's new boyfriend. "Think you'll find she hates me a lot more than she likes you." Tories also like to draw comforting comparisons with 1997, when Labour won a gigantic majority. They contrast the popularity of Sir Tony Blair, who was elected in a landslide that year, with that of Sir Keir Starmer, the current Labour leader. Could Sir Keir draw a crowd of flag-waving patriots to Downing Street? Given that the crowd back then was largely made up of Labour activists who had been bussed in from across the country, yes, he probably could. The scenes outside Downing Street were as artificial as anything the DDR could muster. A cartoonish version of Sir Keir still dominates Conservative attack lines, which paint him as an idealistic lefty lawyer. The critique might have rung true once. In 2020, Sir Keir described Jeremy Corbyn, his left-wing predecessor, as a friend as well as a colleague. He took the knee after the murder of George Floyd. Now, however, it misses the mark. Sir Keir hoofed his friend, Mr. Corbyn, from the party. The most left-wing parts of his manifesto have been stripped out. Arguments that voters will abandon Labour due to a non-existent extremism resemble one of Alexander's doctored news reports which showed people streaming into East Germany due to unemployment, bad future prospects, and the increasing election victories of the neo-Nazi Republicans. Appliant media and party apparatchiks combine to keep the illusion going. One analysis of the local election suggested that Labour would have won 35% of the vote if the contests on May 2nd had happened nationally. Mr. Sunak and his loyal lieutenants leapt on the figure, claiming that Labour was on track for a hung parliament rather than a stonking majority. Newspapers splashed on Mr. Sunak's comments, ignoring the fact that voters behave differently in national polls compared with local ones. If the Prime Minister says it, it must be true. Just as Alexander persuaded his mother that Coca-Cola, advertised outside her window, had been invented by an East German laboratory in the 1950s. Power has already evaporated from the government, but it grinds on, pretending it has a purpose. Civil servants cobble together scraps of policy, just as Alexander rooted through bins to find old jars of Spreewald pickles, a DDR delicacy, to convince his ageing mother. After 6 years of dithering, the government will press on with a ban on wet wipes. Another proposal will, in the government's words, halt the march of gender-neutral toilets. Goodbye Lenin showed how each East Berliner coped with the end of the world in their own way. Some turned to drink, mourning what was gone. Others embraced the wonders of capitalism by taking a job at Burger King. In the same way, some Tories insist all is not lost, while others tour television studios to explain that the party is doomed. Others still are publicly throwing their lot in with Labour. Natalie Elphick, the Conservative MP for Dover, defected to the opposition on May 8th, the second to do so in a matter of weeks. An ex-Tory minister introduced Rachel Reeves, the Shadow Chancellor, at a speech on May 7th. In their hearts, most Conservatives know it is over. There will be no repeat of the last election when an unpopular Labour Party led by a rabid left-winger fell to a heavy defeat. The realignment of 2019 was a mirage. Goodbye Lenin was advertised with the slogan, "In 79 square metres, East Germany lives on." Only in Downing Street do dreams of 2019 never die.